good morning. It's August 27th, and we are in West Riverside, Montana. And this is Caitlin DeSylvie and Miney Smith doing an interview with Fritz Thibodeau. And if you could just start off by telling us your name, and when and where you were born.
Oh, name is Wilfred Virgil Thibodeau. And I never used the Virgil, I always just say Wilfred V. Thibodeau. I was born in Blamore, Alberta, Canada, in December the 13th, 1913.
Great. And how long have you lived in this area and in West Riverside? Or
since 1928.
And did you live always in this in West Riverside, or did you live in Milltown or Bonner before?
Well, when the family moved here, we lived in Milltown, and then when I built the house, the wife and I moved down here.
Okay.
In Pine Grove.
So who was in your family? How old were you then when you moved here, and how many siblings did you have? What was the occasion?
Well, I was, let's see, 1928, I must have been about 15 when I moved here, and I was number 9 out of 10 in the family. We had 5 sisters and 4 brothers.
Did your father get work here, or?
No. My father passed away up in Canada before we moved here. So after my father passed away, my mother moved us back here because this is where a lot of our family lived. My uncles and aunts, and my father had, I think, like 4 brothers. And my mother, she had lived just down in the valley there, not very far from where the pulp plant, where the big pulp plant is down there, uh-huh, by Frenchtown. And my folks, they both came out, let's see, no, which was it? I think it was my father come out from New Brunswick and my mother came out from Maine with their families.
Uh-huh. Where in Maine did she come from?
I think it was Presque Isle.
Uh-huh. I used to live in Maine, so.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So they moved out to that area before 1900, probably, early.
Yeah, I don't know just how early it was. My mother's folks had a ranch down there. And that's, so that was the reason why, when my father passed away, she moved back here, because this was more of the family was.
Mm-hmm. And did you work at the mill, or where did you, you were 15, you probably didn't work at the mill, but did your brothers work at the mill?
Oh, yes. I worked on my grandparents' ranch down at Primrose in the summertime when I was going to school, and then my brothers, let's see, yeah, they all worked up the mill up here,
at the Bonner Mill, not the.
It was at the Anaconda Company.
So when you came of age, where did you work? What was your?
Where did I work? Well, let's see. First off, I graduated in 1932, the height of the Depression. You might recall. So I joined the Civilian Conservation Corps at that time, and I was I was in there, and let's see, the first job I had there in the Civilian Conservation Corps, the way the Army used to do things, you know, they came out and they wanted to know if they wanted somebody that could work, draw a straight line. Says, if you can draw a straight line, we want you. So I said, sure, give me a ruler, I can draw a straight line. So he picked me and put me to work in the quartermaster office, if where they're buying all the material for the Civilian Conservation Corps camps. And so I went to work in there, and I worked, I don't know, I was about, I worked there about, under, with the Civilian Conservation Corps for about 6 months. At the end of that time, they took me from the Civilian Conservation Corps and put me as a civilian employee of the Armed Services, because we were working for the Army at the time, and I put 10 years in for that, and I was the last CCC guy at Fort Missoula.
Oh.
When they set that down, I had to pack up all the records and everything, send them to San Francisco. So that was the first 10 years of my life.
Were you living out in this area while you were working out at the fort, or?
Oh yeah, yeah. That, in the meantime, I was building the house and all this stuff.
Was oh right, 1939. That's what you said. Yeah.
Yeah. So when they closed up here, then I was transferred to San Francisco for the. What they call the market center for the Army, where they were buying the section I was in, we were buying all the personal stuff for the armed services in the Pacific area.
Oh.
So I was there. Oh, I was only there. I was there less than a year. And then I quit that and came back here. Went to work for the Anaconda Company.
Wow. So in about 1943 or something?
Yeah.
And what did you do for Anaconda?
Well, I was in the warehouse at the Anaconda, the purchasing department up there. And
so you're doing the same kind of thing, but...
Same things, only we're We did a lot of different buying, because we had camps out in the woods where they were doing all the logging. Of course, we had to buy all these what they needed out there, because they had the kitchens out there. We had to buy food stuff and all that, and then we had to buy everything that we needed to maintain the sawmill running. Mm-hmm. So,
did Anaconda buy things for people like at Christmas? And I read somewhere that they.
Oh yeah, we used to always get a big turkey at Christmas time. Yeah, they used to be pretty good about those things. Yeah, we come Christmas, we always had to look for our turkey, because you get about a 15-pound turkey.
Wow.
So. Let's see, I was there for about 6 years, and then I took I was working in the warehouse, and they'd made some changes, took me out of the warehouse, put me out in the lumber yard. And that wasn't too interesting out there, piling lumber and loading freight cars and that kind of stuff. So I left the mill and I went to work for the Missoula Mercantile Company downtown.
Oh.
But, and let's see, I worked, I took it just about a year. I worked down there and then I quit that and came back to the mill. So then I went back to work in the purchasing department. Uh-huh. And let's see, I was in there, I don't know how long, let's see. It must have been about 8-10 years when the purchasing officer decided to retire, and then I got that job. I was the, spent about 10 years as the purchasing agent for the Anaconda Force products at that time.
So with that job, did you have a lot of interaction with the company in Butte then? Seems like that's...
Oh, we had to deal with the... Well, I would deal with the warehouse people and the offices over there, the purchasing department in Butte. And we had... Well, when they had strikes, everyone... We had a couple of strikes while I was working up there, you know. And... the first thing we had to do, they sent in a couple of big, or I think it was about three refrigerator cars on the railroad, and we had to fill those up with all the supplies that they needed because every time they had a strike, there was a certain percentage of the employees over there, mainly the monthly employees and whatnot, that remained in the mines up there so they could operate the pumps and all that kind of stuff. So we had to fill those boxcars up and get them over to Butte because when the strike was on, they wouldn't let any, they had a group that was in there, they wouldn't let them out, they wouldn't let anybody else in. So.
So these were quite clear. So you, what did you have to send that from here rather than them getting it in Butte?
Oh no, we had to buy everything and fill those cars up here. And,
okay.
Oh boy, we bought, you know, like meat. We'd buy I don't know how many sides of beef. We had them all hung on those refrigerator cars and bacon and eggs and. You knew, and everything that you would normally eat, we had to have it in the vegetables, and we just filled those cars up with that, including like cigarettes, cigars. Huh.
So they didn't leave the mine the whole time?
Oh, they stay there. They're on strike for the last big one. They're on strike for about 6 months, and we had to have enough there to feed the group in there for that period of time, but I don't remember just exactly how long it was. But,
So these were the strikes in the mines, not strikes here at the mill?
No, no strikes at the mill. Uh-huh. We were still operating because we didn't have anything to do with the mining operation.
So were there ever any strikes at the mill here? Or
Have they strikes?
Were there strikes here at the mill at all?
Oh yeah, we had one good strike that lasted about 6 months, and during that course of the time, the management group had access to the mill. The company had guards and whatnot stationed around the plant, but we were working in the office, and we had access to it all the time. We didn't miss any time.
Hmm.
In fact, we used to have quite a poker game going.
I guess you'd not so much work to do. So did you work through until your retirement then at the...
I worked through and I decided to retire. And after I retired from there, let's see, what else did I do?
What year was that then that you retired? Hmm? What year did you retire?
Let's see. It was about, must have been about 19. Let's see. 74. Must have been right around 1970 when I retired from the mill. And then the wife and I, we just started enjoying retirement, and then I got talked into being a politician, of all things, and I ended up running for county commissioner and won.
Oh.
So I was, must have been the county commissioner, must have been 1974 when I went to work, and I put in 6 years and retired December 31st, 1980. When I left, that was the end of my term. One term was enough. we were through the area when they all this subdivision stuff and all this stuff was starting to blossom, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd have meetings, and I'm telling you, people used to get pretty angry with us. We were called little tin gods and a lot of other names. And let's see, I was serving with Dick Ostergren and Lud Broman. Let's see, and then that was the first. How did it go? Because one of them went off every other year, or every 2 years. But I think I served with them for, well, I think it was 2 years when Dick Ostergren retired, and then Lud Broman retired, and I'm not sure, it was, must have been 4 years. You might know who came on. Barbara Evans. I served with Barbara Evans.
Oh, wow.
We had quite a time. Barbara's a Republican, I was a Democrat, but Barbara and I always got along.
She calls herself a Republicrat these days,
isn't she? So I served with the first years that Barbara was on the on there.
Young Barbara.
For 26 or 28 years now.
She's just going to stop.
She's through the end of the month.
Yeah.
So, So then when I got through with that, no more work.
Yeah.
Did you had kids? You had children? And
I have three daughters.
Uh-huh.
And
do they all live here, or they moved out, or?
No, we had three daughters. Janet was the oldest one, and then the second daughter is Judy. She lives next door to me here. She was 10 years younger. 10 years between the two of them. The next one was Joanne, and she was 2 years younger than Judy, and Janet lives in Whitefish. She was a school teacher. She's to Whitefish. Judy is a school teacher. She lives next door to me. And Joanne as a school teacher over in the Ramsey. She teaches at Ramsey, and she lives in Butte. Huh.
So they all became teachers.
Yeah.
That's neat. Yeah, all three of them. Yeah. Well,
you inspired some respect for learning.
Well, I told them to begin with, if you get to be a school teacher, then that's a start. If you want to go on, you've got the opportunity to continue your education and still work. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to get into something else, then you had the opportunity. Well, Janet, she just decided to be a school teacher. Well, she didn't go on with any more of her education. Neither did Judy, but Joanne, she's got a master's degree in education. So.
So, one of the things you saw change while you were, or just before, after you left the mill, I guess, was the company leaving the mill, selling it. How did that affect the people in the community when that change happened?
What,
in 1971, when the...
They sold all up there?
Yeah.
Well, I really didn't notice a great deal of difference. I don't know. I didn't... I was out of it, so I wasn't paying any attention to it anymore. Huh. So
what would you say is the biggest change that's happened in this area in the last 50 years?
Oh, well, mostly the change in the area is the housing and the and all this stuff that's coming in, and of course the changes in the sawmill, because that affects the whole community here when they have these changes in the sawmill, because there's some people, new ones come in, and old ones have to leave. And
did you have any family still working for the mill then?
No.
Grandchildren or no, cousins?
Incidentally, my wife was a nurse, and she was the last of the family that worked for the company. She was an industrial nurse at the sawmill for, I don't know, for 10 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So she retired after you did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was on there for maybe not that long, because she used to be a nurse for the, she spent a lot of her time at the Northern Pacific Hospital in Missoula, which is now the Providence Center. The old hospital that was there, she must have spent 20 years at least down there.
So she didn't, when the mill changed, when Champion came in, she didn't work for Champion,
it was already Champion when she went to work for him. She worked for Champion.
Oh, okay.
And she didn't work for, see, who was the first one that bought that?
Anaconda.
Well, it was Anaconda. Anaconda Forest Products. Then, there was another one in there.
It was U.S. Plywood.
Yeah, U.S. Plywood. That's
and
right.
And then they merged with Champion.
And then they merged with Champion. She went to work for him when it was Champion.
Uh huh. Okay.
Did a lot of people just carry over from working for Anaconda and then just work for the next company for?
Yes.
They just kept the people on?
Most of the crew, yeah. Uh-huh. They made, as far as I know, most of the changes were in the supervisory area.
Mm-hmm. So has the town, the physical aspects of the town, the houses and the roads and things, has that changed a lot in the last 50 years?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Do you miss anything it used to be?
Well, When we moved here, of course, that's when they had streetcars running. We used to have streetcars running from out here, and like up there at Milltown now, where the store is, the the store's in the same area. That building's been remodeled, but the store's in the same area. But the main entrance to the store was on the east end instead of on the west where it is now. And that's where the main highway went through, with the old bridge. The old bridge is still there. The main highway went up through there. And on the other side of the store, that's where the streetcar was. Hmm. That was the streetcar used to run up there and run all along the fence up at the mill, going up to Bonner and what is now the post office at Bonner. We used to call it the roundhouse, because the streetcar, it was one of those that wasn't a double-ended one, you know, it could only go one way. Hmm. And the tracks went all around what is now the post office up there when the streetcar came in. And then we used to call that the roundhouse all the time. And of course, when the streetcars went out, that made quite a difference up there. You know, we had the cars, there were, let's see, we used to get you up here on a half hour all the time. Mm-hmm. And they run steady all day from about 6 o'clock in the morning. I think the last car, I think that you could catch out of town was something like 11 o'clock at night.
So you could go to a movie or something in town and come back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that was every night. They didn't stop the streetcars because of holidays and all that stuff. So,
do you think that people stopped going to Missoula as often when the streetcar stopped? Did they?
Well, yeah, it affected some of them because a lot of them didn't have the transportation. That was the only means of transportation that a lot of these people had up here. Because back in the 1930s, you didn't see. As many cars running around as you do now.
And right. Did you have a car?
Oh, let's see. We got a car. The first car we had was about 1936, I think it was. And my father-in-law gave us a Model T Ford. And we used that Model T Ford for quite a while. Uh-huh. And then...
did you go far in it?
Oh, yeah. We drove that Model T Ford all the way up into Canada to where I was born. And then I had a sister living in Lethbridge. And we drove it up there, came back. We went over the top of the Going to the Sun Highway.
And, oh, wow.
With that Model T Ford. And when we come down the side of that mountain, we were not about everything in the dam. All we had when we got to the bottom of the hill was high gear. We'd burned out the brakes and used the lower gears.
Yeah, work your way up.
So we had quite a time. We got at Belton. Then we used to come out of Belton and get up on the main highway there from the highway. There's quite a little hill. I had it back up, let it back up and take about 3 or 4 times before I got to the top of that. We got to the top of that and we took off and we made it all the way home. Mm-hmm. I don't know how or why. But
that's a great story.
So what kinds of things did you used to do for fun when you were a young man in this area? What sort of things did you do with your friends?
We used to do a lot of fishing and then let's see, it was in, must have been in about 1928, I think, 1929. We had a hockey team. We had a hockey team made up of 6 Thibodeaux and 2 others. There's myself, well, the 5 of us, and one of our cousins lived up in Millstown. He was on our hockey team. Then we had another gentleman by the name of Dunn. His folks run a hardware store in town. And then there was another young fellow by the name of Carter. He'd come down from from Canada, and I don't know whether he's going to school or not, but he was on our hockey team. So we had a hockey team there for, I think it was just one winter when we did that. But we had quite a time.
Where was the best hockey ice?
Well, we used the ice on the river up there, because that's where my aunt and uncle lived, and they had a house right there on the river, so we just come down from their house, clean off a skating rink down on the river
on,
there.
On between, the Blackfoot?
Yeah, between the bridges up there. Mm-hmm. And we had a rink there, and then they had a big rink in Missoula where where the Art Craft building is, and the old Missoulian building is on that corner there, downtown. That at one time was a ball field, and they in the city used to flood the ball field in the wintertime. It was a skating rink, so mm-hmm. we used to play hockey on that, and that didn't last too long. But most of the time we spent time fishing and hunting and. Mm-hmm. And we didn't do much traveling at that time. But
you didn't go to, you mentioned going to Glacier, but did you go to Yellowstone and?
With the Model T?
Yeah.
Oh, no. When we got back from that kind of trip, that was about the end of the Model T.
Yeah.
Then we got one of the new Fords that came out. And that was the start of our cars. Started out with Fords, then Chevys, and then Oldsmobiles. And now I got a GMC truck.
So did you keep a boat that you went out on the reservoir with to fish? Or did you just fish along the bank? Or?
No, well, at that time we did most of our fishing on the rivers. We didn't. And then let's see. Back in about 1947, we bought a lot up on Sealy Lake, and we built a little cabin up there. So then we had boats, and we used to do a lot of fishing on the lake after we had the cabin.
Were there community organizations that were active when you were here, you know, like the, in other words, the Finnish group had their.
Oh yeah,
were there other organizations that you were involved in, or?
No, I wasn't involved in any.
Or the church.
Too much of that. Well, yes, with the church at Bonner, of course, uh-huh. the Catholic Church up there, we went to that. But other than that, we weren't involved very much.
Was there a difference between the communities, between Bonner and Milltown and West Riverside? Or was it all sort of one big community?
Oh, no, there used to be, well, it used to be that the Swedes and the Finlanders and those, they had organizations that they had. They had the Finn Hall up here where we... They used to have dances I don't know. I didn't pay too much attention to that.
Does it seem like the kind of people who live in the area has changed over time? Like, whether there used to be more families or more people of different ethnicities? Like, who lives here now compared to when you arrived here?
Oh, I don't know. Of course. When we got here, of course, most of the people were all mill workers, you know. But now there's that is pretty well gone down the line, because the mill is pretty well shut down now. But the thing that I noticed most was that we started getting a lot of people from town coming out and building homes. And you got into into the more the you get more of the professional people, and of course the type of workers like from town to working in the stores downtown and whatnot, they were moving out here, so it made quite a difference in the community because it was a different mix, and so it was kind of interesting as far as what happened between the being a sawmill town and then being more of a just an ordinary town where you got a mix of all kinds of people.
Mm-hmm. Has that continued to happen? Who are your neighbors now? Like when you look around?
Oh yeah, we have up around Pillsville and up in those places. We got a lot of professional people up in that area. We got bankers and we got lawyers and we got a pretty good representative of all the population in the area. It's made a difference because it made a difference in what goes on around.
Did people used to talk more or help each other out more, or was it more neighborly before?
Oh, I think so. I think there were they used to have of course that was before my time when we got here. They used to have a big kind of a park deal across the highway over here on the river. I forget what they called it.
Riverside Park?
Well, I guess I don't know what they called it at that time. I think it was probably Riverside Park, but with the streetcar running right by there, they used to have quite a few events going on over in there. But that was before I.
So it had gone by the time you.
Yeah, that they had gone, but the Finn Hall was still here.
Yeah.
And of course, those groups from there, the Finns and the other type of, like the Norwegians, they were kind of stayed more together than what they do now. And, but the, at Milltown, they used to have a dance hall right in Milltown, where the, on this side of the store, where that service station was, it's a refrigeration outfit or something that's got the place
now.
Oh,
yeah, that little white building.
Yeah. There was two big two-story buildings in there. The one had a saloon in it and a barber shop. Upstairs was a dance hall. And boy, they used to put on some awful rowdy parties up there.
Where did you meet your wife?
Where did I meet her? Well, strangely enough, I was a patient at St. Patrick's Hospital. She was in training.
She was a good nurse.
Oh yeah, she was a good nurse. She was. Well, I don't know. I went in there for. What the heck did I? I was in there for some damn thing. I gotta think. But I know I spent 36 days in the hospital that time.
Because
I ended up with pneumonia and I don't know what all. But that's when I first met her. She was a nurse there, and my sister was a nurse, so the two were buddies down there. So. Huh.
Yeah.
So was it pretty common for women to have careers like your wife and your sister, and or
to have what?
Careers, like as a nurse, she had her own job and...
Oh, yeah.
Did a lot of women work outside the home when you were a young man?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. There were, back in the 30s, there were a lot of them that were working out. Yeah, a lot of... There was, of course, at that time, there was opportunities where the women could get a job and the man couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a lot of women working.
How did the coming of the interstate affect the town, communities? Did it change it a lot?
Well, actually, the construction of the interstate through there didn't affect the physical appearance of the town, because it was all built outside of the...
Mm-hmm.
It was built over there by the river, but outside of the intersection up here, it didn't make a great deal of change. And of course, with the intersection up there, and then with the town pump coming in, that made quite a change in the mm-hmm. in the whole setup up there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was, and then of course the Highway 200 made more of a change in the town when they went through, because where the Highway 200 bridge goes across the river, that used to be the railroad or the streetcar bridge went through there.
Because
that.
When did the 200 come through?
When 200 came through in the 40s, was it? Or was it before that?
Oh, yeah, it must have been in the 40s. Yeah.
So one thing that would have changed with the interstate is that it would be a lot harder for people to get down to the river and the area around the powerhouse. Did people, do you think that affected people to get cut off like that from the... From the river?
Well, of course the power coming, with the power in there and the dam and the area above the dam, there were very few restrictions. People used that. There was boating and whatnot on there. But the highway, of course, when the interstate comes through, that separated all that area from this area on this side. So it, and of course, when I was first here, we had the Western Lumber Company there, where the service station's up there, And of course, when that went out, that made quite a difference in this area, because it seemed at that time when the both mills were running, it seemed to be that more people from the West Riverside were working at the Western Lumber Company, and the people on the other side were working at Bonner. But it was.
And they just tore that down when it was closed?
Yeah, when Clark closed it, they just tore it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then there wasn't anything much there until the town pump came in.
Uh-huh. That's a long time for it to be an empty patch of ground, isn't it?
Yeah. How do you feel about the river being cleaned up? Is that a good thing, or...?
Well, I don't know. I have some feelings that maybe they should have left it, but I don't know. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen after they get the river out of there, whether it's going to be a lot. There's still a lot of that stuff along the river that is still going to come down the river, and it's not going to end up at the dam. It's going to go on down the river.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Of course, having a home on the lake, I kind of get used to my cabin on the lake. You kind of get used to the to activities on the lake and whatnot. So I know there was quite a bit of activities on the reservoir up here. And of course, when I first came here, that reservoir was a lot bigger than what it is now, because there's about 6 million tons or something that they're going to take out of there.
Yeah.
That wasn't there when I moved here.
So, what do you mean, because it's all built up?
Yeah, it's all built up. Yeah. Yeah, out there where you see those islands and whatnot out there in the pond, none of that was there. That was all water, clean up past the Milwaukee, where the Milwaukee railroad tracks came across.
Yeah.
It was a big pond at that time. And, of course, you could, in the wintertime, we used to be able to, I've seen times in the winter when we get an early freeze, like in November, that you could put your skates on and start Milltown there and skate all the way up past Pillsville and all the way up the river there, because that was all part of the pond.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know. I suppose maybe the better thing is to take it out, because eventually it's going to have to come out anyway, because it was getting to the point that they had to do something with it. Because I understand the construction actually in the stream bed isn't like they build dams these days. When Clark built that, of course he built the dam and put it in there to get power for his sawmill.
So, and the streetcar.
And the streetcars, yeah. Well, yeah, I think it might have been, but it was the Montana Power Company that had streetcars. They run the streetcars for years there, right? Yeah, that's, I always remember the Montana Power Company because when I was in high school, we had a special assembly one morning just for the students who rode the streetcars from Bonner Milltown into Missoula. And the purpose of it was that the Montana Power was real upset with the kids, because they're inclined to be kind of a wild bunch, I guess. But we had this assembly, and he gave us a lecture about how to behave on the streetcar. He says, "What do you think we're running? A bunch of cattle cars for streetcars?" He said.
Yeah.
And the kids used to, they used to tear up the seats, or, all the leather seats, that somebody take a knife out, of course, and make a cut. Well, pretty soon you got a seat that's got to be replaced, and then they messed up the streetcar. So we really got a lecture, and that was kind of strange, because everybody wanted, all the kids in the school want to know why. How come these Bonner Milltown kids get a special assembly?
They get to get out of class.
So was there just one high school in Missoula at that time?
That's right, Hellgate.
Hellgate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Missoula County High School at the time.
Okay. So when the powerhouse and the dam come out, what do you think that area should look like? What do you think it should be when that's all finished?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to look like when they get all that muddy stuff out of there. But I don't know. They, of course, I think it should, the area on the Clark's Fork going up, they should let that get back down to what it was like before they put the dam in, where you had the vegetation and all that down in there, and get it back to what it naturally would be. But the Blackfoot sites, you've got another problem, because that's always, there hasn't been a lot of vegetation and whatnot down along the river, and I don't think there was when they put the dam in, so that's going to be kind of a straight shot mm-hmm. from the mill up there right down to the dam area. And of course the Fripper, that's going to be a good recreation area. You can get your canoes out and go
a fast trip.
Go down the whitewater, as they say.
So what do you think Milltown and Bonner and West Riverside will be like in 50 years? Do you think they're going to be a lot more houses here, do you think?
Or does it put us at 2057?
Well, yeah, I think there's going to be, there's quite a lot of building going on around, like up around Tour on that area. They're building a lot. And of course, up to Blackfoot, there's not all that great amount of area up there where you can build, except those steep hills, you know. So I don't know.
And when the mill goes, what do you think will? Do you think they'll get developed, or do you think it'll?
My guess would be that it's not going to be too very long before the lumber yard on this end, from where the plant actually is, where they had the logging yard up there, I think you're going to start seeing development there, because I think that's the company doesn't have any more use for that ground. They've been making changes now so that they're going to have moved their, where their logs are coming into the mill now. They're probably all going to come in at the other end, because they're on the north side, starting from way at the other end of Bonner all the way down to the post office.
Mm-hmm.
Those houses are all coming out. Those people have to the end of this month to get up, and then I think they're going to start to just demolish them. They're going to tear them all out, because they're doing that to get their lumber yard up to the other end, because that's where the Stahl plant is, and that's the only plant they have left. So they're going to move all their lumber operations to the east end. So then everything this side is going to be, you know, there's a place for quite a sizable subdivision there. And then of course there's quite a bit of building going on up around Tour. There's a big subdivision going in up there, and so I think you're going to see it'll probably be a lot of homes in the area.
So that'll change the mix of the community
again. Oh yeah, you got another group coming in, so yeah.
Does it make you, how do you feel about the changes that are happening there, especially in Bonner there with the houses being demolished?
Well, I don't know, it's kind of hard to figure out just exactly what's going to happen, but I think you're going to get more and more, it's going to come more like what it is in Missoula. You're not going to be the outsider as much as we're. In fact, we are becoming more and more a part of Missoula. So, and where there's areas to build, there's quite a lot of areas up in the Tour area and up there, and I think that's going to get all built up, and you're going to be like Missoula, is just going to spread out.
Yeah, because it used to be a pretty distinct area, its own community, its own people.
Oh yeah, Tour was their little old spot there. Clinton, of course, is still their spot, but of course, down here, we're Pine Grove. We're pretty much a part of everything else when they started building here, because it wasn't just people from a certain group that started building in this area.
So this is actually Pine Grove, not West Riverside, then?
This is Pine Grove.
Okay, so we got that wrong at the beginning. I guess we need to... Where does Pine Grove start and West Riverside begin?
Oh, you have to take the division up there about... let's see. What the hell's the name of that street? The first street that goes straight back towards the mountain. I think that's about where that Reckon Yard is up there.
Mm-hmm.
From there this way, there wasn't very many houses down in here. That's where Pine Grove started, right here.
Okay.
And it spread back that way. And then, of course, the area up on the other side took in the Zog Ranch and all that. In there, it was West Riverside, and this down here was Pine Grove.
Huh. So when you built your house here in the 30s, it was one of the first houses out here?
Well, it wasn't the first. There wasn't too many houses. There was only about five or six houses around, right in this area, and then to the west of us here, there wasn't anything, you know.
Do you know how it got its name? Pine Grove? Do you know how it got its name?
No, I haven't any idea, but there was a family by the name of Pines that had one of the first houses in here.
Oh, so it actually couldn't maybe about the Pine family rather than the trees.
Yeah, I think it's probably could have been about the Pine family, because they did have a home here. In fact, the house has been moved and remodeled. It's down. It's the second one from the far end. Was a house that the Pines owned. It used to sit where the the third house is there now. That was my sister's place, and that used to sit in that area, and that was the only house down in this area at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think possibly it might have been because of the Pines.
That's great.
Of course, the pine trees could have had something.
Yeah, maybe it was both of them, yeah.
Because when you add the grove to the pine trees, then it gives you the idea that maybe it was the Pines, but I don't know.
The other thing I'm just curious about, so your nickname is Fritz?
Hmm?
Do people call you Fritz?
Oh, yeah.
How did that come about? Because...
Well, I'll tell you, when I was about that high,
okay.
That was back during the First War, 1918. I was about, 4, 5 years old at that time. And I don't know, they always told me that I had a temper. And the kids, I don't know where they got the idea, but they used to refer to the Germans as the Fritzies.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know where the connection is there, but I used to get in trouble with the other kids, so they always called me a Fritzie.
Oh.
Just like those damn Germans across the pond, you're a Fritzie.
So
it evolved into Fritz, and that's what I've...
You've been called ever since.
Ever since, as long as I can remember, I've been Fritz.
And what was your wife's name?
My wife's name was Edith.
Edith.
Hmm. Edith May. Edith May Chess.
Well...
Edith May Chess was her maiden name. In fact, her maiden name had been changed. Her family, she was born in Livingston, that's where her family was, and her folks came over from Italy in And her dad's name was Judah Chess. And he worked for the railroad. And when he was working for the railroad, they always had trouble spelling his name and keeping track of him as Judah Chess. So he went and had his name changed to just Chess instead of Judah Chess. So
how did you spell Judah Chess?
Spell what?
How did you spell the original name?
Oh boy, I'd have to.
Yeah, yeah, you'd have to look it up.
It starts with a G, G U D Y.
I see.
No, Jew. So it's a pretty long name.
He made it simpler.
Yeah. I could pronounce it, but I never remembered how to spell it.
Well, is there anything else that you want to share? That this is pretty much the end of our questions here.
Oh, let's see. What the hell went on? Well, of course, we had the Club Chateau here, you know, for quite a few years. It was a real night spot, and even with all the crowds and everything they had over there, they never did bother us. Mm-hmm. We never had any trouble with them, and. I was always kind of sorry to see them go, because they really had a nice dinner set up over there, and they had all kinds of they used to have special nights and all that kind of stuff. They had, it was quite a place, and they used to have big crowds. But when they left, that changed the neighborhood, and of course we had that big building sitting over there. They apparently can't sell it. They can't get anybody to. Incidentally, the building itself was built by Richie Fontaine. He was a prize fighter, and he built the building for his training center, and he got to be up fighting with the top-notch fighters in the country. He fought he fought Armstrong and all those type of people. So, and they had their house right over there, so he built that big building for his training center.
When would that have been that he built it?
Oh, back in the 1930s.
Uh-huh. And then how long was it the Club Chateau?
Oh, it must have been there for... Oh, good 10, 12 years, or maybe a little more.
Hmm. And it closed down when?
Oh, that's been quite a while since they closed. The people that had it just decided they were going to retire because they wanted to move someplace. I don't know what all their reasons were, but then they just closed it. And I don't know, it was, must have been long about in the 1950s or thereabouts, when, 1950s, boy, my memory don't serve me the way it should.
So then,
you're doing great.
Yeah, that's pretty, so then after the Club Chateau, was it something else for a while, and then it's just, how long has it been sitting there empty?
Ever since they closed
it. Really? Oh.
Yeah.
It's amazing it's still there, actually. It seems like someone would have bought it.
They've had a few things try it there, but it just didn't work. It just, like, they've got some outfit over there now that they're open about 2 days a week, and what they have according to their ads on the building out there. They got one of those neon ads. Selling department store surpluses, I guess, you know, when the seasons change and whatnot, these department stores change their merchandise, and then they get rid of it through some of these type of outfits. So that's over there now, but I haven't been over. I don't know what it just exactly what it is. So, see what else went on around her that I could think of that it hadn't been a great deal of stuff that that I've been involved in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, well, that's great what you shared.
Yes, yes, we really appreciate this, and people will enjoy listening to and hearing your stories from now on. That's great. We really appreciate
Thank you.
Sharing it with us.
Oh, well, thank you for coming out.